Kaixo, ni Oski naiz eta Donostian bizi naiz. Euskal Herritik nator mundura Rick Stevesekin. Hi, I'm Agustin from San Sebastian, coming from the Basque Country to the world with Rick Steves. Kaixo, ni Oski naiz eta Donostian bizi naiz. Euskal Herritik nator mundura Rick Stevesekin.
Bears in Italy, wolves in Germany, Iberian lynx in Spain. Wildlife might not come to mind when we think about Europe, but with the help of some dedicated biologists and conservationists, wild animals are making a comeback. Ecologist Chris Morgan has been following efforts to restore wilderness across Europe. The familiar host of the series Nature on PBS has recently visited places like the Coa River Valley in Portugal and Andalusia in Spain, and reports on success stories in restoring wilderness for his podcast, The Wild with Chris Morgan. Chris joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to talk about what he's found and why rewilding efforts in Europe and around the globe are so important. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So, rewilding. It's a cool word. I got to say, I don't even know what it is, really. Explain to us, what is rewilding?
It's almost like the modern way of saying conservation. It really is sort of trying to bring back something of the past when it comes to nature and ecosystems and habitats around the world, or at least maintaining them in the way they are now, with a view to bringing back perhaps some of the big critters and wild animals that used to be there in the future once things are ready for it.
So it is sort of implying that today it's not like it was before, and we can go to how it was before, rewilding. Is it just a matter of letting nature take over? Will nature do its thing? I mean, for example, I was very inspired by Attenborough's filming of Chernobyl, where if we just leave it for a couple of decades, nature takes over.
Yeah, Chernobyl, that example is an extreme example, but you don't have to go that extreme in order for nature to take a leg hold back. Literally, you just give her the space and time and don't destroy elements of nature, and they do come back. And there's proof all over Europe. It's interesting. You say that we don't think of the wild when it comes to Europe. And I'm European originally from England, but I've been over in the States here for 23 years now. Uh-huh. So I have a very American view of what Europe is. And now I go back and I'm blown away at how wild the place has become and the success of the projects there.
See, now that's news to me because I was just over there in Switzerland. I mean, miles from any, quote, civilization. And all I saw was a marmot. I mean, that's it. I was hiking for a week and I saw one marmot. Yeah, no offense, marmot. But you're talking about wolves in Germany and brown bears in northern Spain.
Yeah.
Tell us what's going on in here from a wild point of view.
It's hard to know where to start because just about every country in Europe has a really cool project going on that is bringing back, and I'm not talking about necessarily just the flowers, plants, and trees, but some of the big creatures that folklore has made us fearful of, mm-hmm. especially in Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Little Red Riding Hood stories emerged in Europe. Every child across Europe hears those stories and is fearful of these big carnivores. Now they're coming back. A few years ago, I went to Germany to monitor where these wolves were coming back, and they crept across, you can almost picture it in the dead of night, they crept across the Polish border into eastern Germany. Just a handful of wolves. They'd been extinct in Germany for over 100 years, nearly 120 years. Now they're taking a hold, and in the last 20 years, the wolf numbers have increased to 1,000. There's 1,000 wild wolves in Germany. But it's a very different landscape to the wolf habitat and ecosystems we would see in Yellowstone or in North America, which are generally much wilder. Over there, the big carnivores can mix in with local communities a bit more.
Because there's more wild space in Canada or the United States national parks. And in Europe, it's more dominated by human settlements.
Exactly. Yes, yes.
So that is, you almost have to do a PR campaign for people not to have a backlash and say we're being invaded by bears or wolves.
Right.
Isn't that a tough sales pitch to say wolves are okay, bears are okay? I mean, I would think most people would say no.
In some ways, it is tough. There's so many sides to the story depending upon where you come from, how you were raised, what your livelihood is. But people who work close to the land often feel a threat from large carnivores. I met a shepherd over there, for example, in Germany, who had had sheep killed by wolves, so very directly impacting his livelihood. And I felt for the guy. I spent the whole day with him and learning from him. But in true German style, he didn't look at this as a problem that couldn't be solved. He took it upon himself to figure out what the solutions were, and he got livestock guarding dogs. And the guarding dogs will literally protect the sheep against the wolves. So there's all these little electric fences and other things that you can deploy.
So we can coexist.
Totally, yes, yeah.
And then why does it matter? I mean, who cares if there's bears or not? I mean, I'm sort of being a little bit of a devil's advocate, but we've managed fine without bears.
Yeah. You know, I think for me and other people who study these big carnivores, they become these flagship species, you know, these creatures that you can point to and say, if we protect them, we protect whole ecosystems.
Oh.
So take Italy, for example. It's a place I spent a lot of time. I fell in love with this place in central Italy called Abruzzo, the National Park of Abruzzo, Lazio, and Molise. And there are 50 or 60 brown bears left, same as our grizzlies, but in the heart of Italy, just 2 hours drive from Rome. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. But they've coexisted there for 6,000 years with human beings. It's possible there. They need extra space. They need connectivity to other national parks in the area. But they're doing okay. They're eking out an existence 2 hours from a city the size of Rome, which is hard to get your head around, isn't it?
Yeah. And are you saying that if the bears are doing okay, it's more than just the bears are doing okay? That's the tip of a ecological iceberg where you can say the environment's doing okay.
It's exactly that. A bit of a litmus test for the health of an ecosystem.
Because it's a holistic thing. It's a complex web where you need vegetation and the animals to make it all healthy.
Exactly. And without that intact ecosystem, the bears can't survive. And so you can use these bears. I did this back of the envelope calculation a few years ago. There are 8 bear species in the world. We have 3 of them in North America, for example. If you were to protect the land of all 8 bear species, you would protect a third of the Earth's land surface. So you can see what an amazingly powerful tool that is. These animals are charismatic and they're cute and they're, you know, inspirational, but you protect them and you also protect the planet and everything we need as well. So to me, it's all about not the bad news, but the inspiring side of it, right? Because to me, climate change and biodiversity loss is the most exciting opportunity on Earth.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Chris Morgan, and we're getting a glimpse into the process of rewilding in Europe. Chris has dedicated himself to nature conservation through his various roles as an ecologist, wilderness guide, a filmmaker. He's the host of PBS Nature. He's also the host of The Wild with Chris Morgan. That's a podcast about wildlife, conservation, and the wonders of our wild planet. You can find out more about the projects that Chris is working on at his website. It's chrismorganwildlife.org. So, Chris, I know about climate change. Everybody seems to, but biodiversity, you're talking like that's even, it's the foundation of a healthy environment where we can be sustainable.
Exactly.
Tell me the importance of biodiversity and how that powers this whole rewilding movement.
Well, you know, we know of about 1.2 million species on Earth. We think there are about 9 million species. We've not discovered most of them yet. But that total sum of variety on Earth in terms of living creatures, that's biodiversity. That's that interconnected web and giant ecosystem that we are a part of as well. We fancy ourselves as kind of a bit more advanced and civilized. Now we've moved beyond nature. But trust me, we haven't, you know. We are definitely an intrinsic part of it. We're kind of primal beings at the end of the day. And so I love to try and reconnect people with that primal sort of being side of them, you know, and realize this stuff. So,
you know, if you're looking at a putting green and you see a perfect, homogenous, mono species piece of grass, you probably think different than a golfer who might think, isn't that perfect? You might think, we need some weeds. We need some dandelions. We need some variety.
Even just this year, I have a lawn and I just let it go. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to mow this anymore, especially in May and springtime.
It was full of insects. I got my excuse now. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. I'm going to have a festival of diversity in my backyard.
Can you imagine the insects in a town if none of the lawns were mowed, you know? And we need those insects. Bees are under threat. Pollinators are under threat.
So let's just review some of the successes that rewilding has had just in Europe, because Europe's always my focus. Tell me just 3 or 4 examples where there's actually good news on the horizon when it comes to biodiversity and, what do we call them, macrofauna?
Megafauna.
Megafauna.
Yeah.
Megafauna. Where are the megafauna doing good around Europe?
You know, I was in northern Spain, the Cordillera Cantabrica, and I was there as a 20-year-old, so over 30 years ago, and there were 60 brown bears left in those mountains. They run east-west along the top of the country, as you know. And it's not the Spain of beaches and parasols and gin and tonics. It's the Spain of big beech forests and mountains and big wild animals. And there were only 60 bears there 30 years ago. I went back in the fall. It's another story of running into this lady who adopted me while I was there when I was 20. She's still around, and these mountains have rewilded over that 30-year period since I last saw her and I was last there. Now there are close to 400 bears, from 30 years ago to 400 brown bears in northern Spain. It's unimaginable, but legislation, protection for them, and changing hearts and minds and attitudes are the three things that have really turned things around.
Raising awareness is, must be critical for this.
Big time.
And we get to a critical number, and suddenly that community is more stable, mm-hmm. and it's a healthier environment.
Yes. Can I tell you about Portugal? It's a really great project unfolding there, a young group of conservationists.
This is the Coa River, right? C-O-A. You were there, and it's a happening example of rewilding in Portugal.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I was there in the fall. And it's an interesting place because they went through this thing, the whole of rural Portugal went through it. And it was called something I didn't know about till I got there, rural abandonment.
Right.
Where people who lived and for generations in these little villages as farmers and local workers, they left to go and make a better living in cities, sometimes in Portugal, sometimes in other countries. Mm-hmm. And so it left the countryside to grow. All the sheep had gone, all the grazing animals left. So you'd think, oh, that's great. Nature comes back. Mm-hmm. So it did. It bounced back, but the shrub layer came back, which started fires. So they've been having these colossal fires in Portugal now, which have been a problem. So they're trying to figure out how to stop these fires. And it's a bit of an arrested development, the ecosystem. They can't get beyond this brush into the full-grown trees that used to be there thousands of years ago with all the wolves, bears, and everything else. So they've brought in an ancient breed of horse now called Soraya horses to graze the brush down to stop the fires so that the ecosystem can grow the trees back and it can be a fully flourishing thing 100 years from now with all the big wild animals that belong there as well. It's really inspiring stuff there.
You know, I love the phrase, the best way to control nature is to obey her. Mm. But what we're talking about with rewilding is a little more sophisticated than that because it does involve human coaching or human help to maybe just overcome problems that humans have created. But things can get on track probably much better with that human activism.
They absolutely can. And there's great examples of that where a little bit of human help injected at the right point and then leave nature to the rest of it.
Okay, so that critical little course correction.
Yeah.
Then turn the power of nature loose.
Yes, exactly. And it's just space and time. Nature just needs space and time. And there's a great example of a rewilding project in Andalusia, in south of Spain. Uh-huh. And there they have this cat, their big cat. It's not like our big cat, the mountain lion, but it's still a pretty big, good-sized cat called the Iberian lynx.
Okay.
And the Iberian lynx was hunted to close to extinction. And over the last few years, it's grown in numbers by 1,000% over this last 20 or 30 years, just from that little injection of human help, protecting the habitat, educating people who don't want the cats around, and having them become a bit of a tourist industry based around these cats now. You see lots of Spanish people going to Andalusia now to go and find these cats and photograph them and hike near them. And even if they don't see them, knowing that they're there is something really special for local Spanish people. And as that's happened, the ecosystem has been affected to the point where in certain places, I went to a hunting estate. You wouldn't even think that hunters would support cats because these cats generally eat the things that the hunters are there to hunt. But in this case, they've helped these cats back. It's a really impressive place. So I met a couple of the hunters and they said, actually, it's been great for us. They're partridge hunters. So they said the cats came back, the Iberian lynx came back. What happened was the fox numbers dropped. The fox numbers had been hammering the partridges. So on this estate, there used to be 40 foxes, and now there are 3 because the cats have outcompeted them. And now the place is just thriving with rabbits and partridges and everything else that these hunters want. So just bringing that cat back was the trigger to a healthier ecosystem.
Chris Morgan is helping us understand how Europeans are rewilding their backcountry right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Chris has produced a documentary about the people in central Italy who are working to preserve the habitat of one of the world's most endangered species, the Marzocan brown bear. It's called Path of the Bear, and it won Best Short Film at the 2023 Italy International Film Festival. Chris also hosts a podcast called The Wild. You can find out more about Chris's work at chrismorganwildlife.org. Chris, when we think about rewilding and the work you're so passionate about, I think of the open expanses of the Highlands in Scotland, for example. Mm. And you drive through there, and there's clearly more sheep than people, and it just seems like the rolling hills go on forever. But there's more to it than that, isn't there? You've got a friend that's busy rewilding in Scotland.
Yes.
What does he see as needed, and what's he doing?
Well, if you look at those hills, and they are beautiful, aren't they? They're stunning. You can picture the Highlands. But really, that's not the way they should be. Hundreds and thousands of years ago, they were covered in forests. They were called the Caledonian Forests, and they were famed by Romans and others that used them for shipbuilding and times in history, and the Industrial Revolution destroyed all these big forests in Scotland. So it looks very different to the wild Scotland it should look like.
And it really was the work of the Industrial Revolution, because
yes,
they needed the timber.
Yes.
And they had it there in spades.
Exactly.
And today we run across the hills and we celebrate the Highlands, but really environmentalists would go up there and see tragedy.
Yes. Yeah, kind of a desolate place that doesn't have the big creatures and the forest that it
used
to have.
Therefore, it's needing that diversity, that biodiversity.
Right, exactly. So my friend up there owns an estate. His name is Paul Lister, and he owns an estate called Allerdale. And people can go and visit it. It's a beautiful, stately home and 23,000 acres of the northern Scottish Highlands. It's talk about magical. And he's rewilding it, starting with the forest. The problem is there's so many deer there, the forests don't get to take hold. There's no natural predators for deer, and they graze the saplings of the trees, so the forest doesn't get to come back. So it's a case of trying to bring down the numbers of deer, either fencing them out or sometimes culling them, and then replanting. And he planted 1 million trees on this 23,000 acres, not on his own, but with a lot of help. And he's bringing that forest back. And someday, you know, there's dreams of perhaps even having wolves howling in the Scottish Highlands once again.
You know, Chris, your enthusiasm and your passion is just making me feel very positive and confident, but I'm skeptical because of the power of capitalism and people wanting to monetize everything and corporate values that have to have short-term profits. Capitalism is here to stay. There's no doubt about it. But it seems to me we need to invest in things that are not short-term profitable, but long-term sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires political will.
Yes, absolutely. And maybe it starts with the public voting for the right people, right? Because
uh-huh.
that's what forges change. And there's often people who don't like the idea of change. And ecology and conservation is all about change. It's what nature does best is change and evolve, right? And I think that as a society, we need to sort of get our heads around that and grasp a hold of rewilding, because it provides for every human on Earth. It's what we need. If we don't have a healthy ecosystem in terms of the planet itself, humans are going to suffer. Our days are numbered if we don't get smart very quickly. But then it is a case of making sure that everyone has access to the information that they need about ecology, about the planet, about wildlife, about politics, you know, so they can make those smart decisions.
And this is a travel show, and we can gain that exposure and those ideas through traveling on purpose to find out what's going on in Andalusia with the lynx. Chris Morgan, thank you so much for your work and your passion and your website. I mean, your website, I want to say it again. It's chrismorganwildlife.org. You go there and people can learn why so many people are so evangelical about making a difference with rewilding. Best wishes, Chris.
Thank you so much, Rick. It's been really fun talking to you.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Kazmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. We get promotion support from Sheila Gerzoff, website support from Andrew Wakeling, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Special thanks to Tyler Bates for music from the soundtrack to The Way. Chris Morgan tells us about reconnecting with his adopted grandma in northern Spain. It's in an extra to today's show at ricksteves.com/radio. See you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.